Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 22, Prithu Maharaja's Meeting with the Kumaras, text number 34. Is that right? Na kuryat sangam.
Na kuryat kahichit sangam.
Tamaste vrantiti rishuhu.
Tamaste vrantiti rishuhu.
Dharmartha-kama moksharam.
Dharmartha-kama moksharam.
Yad-adyanta-vikhatakam.
Yad-adyanta-vikhatakam.
Nākuryāt-kahi-chit-saṅgam.
Nākuryāt-kahi-chit-saṅgam.
Tamastibhram-titi-rishyuhu.
Tamastibhram-titi-rishyuhu.
Dharmata kama mokshanam.
Dharmata kama mokshanam.
Yadatyanta vighatakam.
Yadatyanta vighatakam.
Narkuryat kahichit sangam.
Narkuryat kahichit sangam.
Tamaste vramditi
rishu. Tamaste vramditi rishu.
Dharmata kama mokshanam.
Dharmata kama mokshanam.
Yadadyanta vidghatakam.
Yadadyanta vidghatakam.
Na.
Na.
Do not.
Do not.
Kuryat.
Kuryat.
Act.
Act.
Kahichit.
Kahichit.
At any time.
At any time.
Sangam.
Sangam.
Association.
Association.
Tamaha.
Tamaha.
Ignorance.
Ignorance.
Tivram.
Tivram.
With great speed.
With great speed.
Tidirishuhu.
Tidirishuhu.
Persons who desire.
Persons who desire.
To cross over nescience.
To cross over nescience.
Dharma.
Dharma.
Religion.
Religion.
Artha.
Artha.
Economic development.
Economic development.
Kama.
Kama.
Sense gratification.
Sense gratification.
Mokshanam.
Mokshanam.
Of salvation.
Of salvation.
Yat.
Yat.
That which.
That which.
Atyanta.
Atyanta.
Very much.
Very much.
Vighatakam.
Vighatakam.
Obstruction.
Obstruction.
Or stumbling block.
Or stumbling block.
Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance. For hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions to realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last, liberation. Right. Listen to some of the previous verses here. There is no stronger obstruction to one's self-interest than thinking other subject matters to be more pleasing than one's self-realization. For human society, constantly thinking of how to earn money and apply it for sense gratification brings about the destruction of everyone's interests. When one becomes devoid of knowledge and devotional service, he enters into species of life like those of trees and stones. Those who strongly desire to cross the ocean of nescience must not associate with the modes of ignorance, for hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions. To realization of religious principles, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and at last liberation. Purport. The four principles of life allow one to live according to religious principles, to earn money according to one's position in society, to allow the senses to enjoy the sense objects according to regulations, and to progress along the path of liberation from this material attachment. As long as the body is there, it is not possible to become completely free from all these material interests. It is not, however, recommended that one act only for sense gratification and earn money for that purpose only, sacrificing all religious principles. At the present moment, human civilization does not care for religious principles. It is, however, greatly interested in economic development without religious principles. For instance, in a slaughterhouse, the butchers certainly get money easily, but such business is not based on religious principles. Similarly, there are many nightclubs for sense gratification and brothels for sex. Sex, of course, is allowed in married life, but prostitution is prohibited because all our activities are ultimately aimed at liberation, at freedom from the clutches of material existence. Similarly, although the government may license liquor shops, this does not mean that liquor shops should be opened unrestrictedly and illicit liquor smuggled. Licensing is meant for restricting. No one has to take a license for sugar, wheat, or milk, because there is no need to restrict these things. In other words, it is advised that one not act in a way that will obstruct the regular process of advancement in spiritual life and liberation. I wonder if that's a mistake there. In others' words. That means probably I was quoting somebody else. But usually in the use of that is in other words. But who knows?
In words of others? Other people?
That's right. Anyway, the Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Vedic civilization offers us all knowledge. I think it's a mistake. But we may never know. The Vedic process of sense gratification is therefore planned in such a way that one can economically develop and enjoy sense gratification and yet ultimately attain liberation. Vedic civilization offers us all knowledge in the Shastras. And if we live a regulated life under the direction of Shastras and Guru, all our material desires will be fulfilled. At the same time, we will be able to go forward to liberation. Om Jnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmaye Shri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stam Pitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadam Jikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pankulam Gayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Rum Dinatarinam. So, what is the greatest obstruction to the realization of these four principles? Hedonistic activities. Yes, hedonistic activities. Sangam tamaha. Sangam. Sangat sanjayate kama. Something to be remembered. And also, for the devotees, the first principle as identified by Lord Chaitanya, the first characteristic of a Vaishnava is asat sangha, tyag, right? Asat sangha tyag. The Vaishnava's first quality is that they give up bad association. Asat sangha. Those who are attached to the asat. And here that's illustrated. Although, in one sense, we're talking about here dharma, artha, karma, moksha. But pretty much in the pursuit of any activity, one has to be careful about who one associates with, right? Because sangha sanjayate kama, we are influenced or we are affected by the association that we take, right? And for those who are interested in self-realization, this is of critical importance. You know, if we associate with the drunks in the park, what do we become? I'm not suggesting that this is what you do, but I always tell this story. I used to see in Port Augusta. For some reason or other, it was my fate, my karma, that my father, in order to pursue his career as a teacher and as a school administrator, then he would go to some of the worst schools in the state of South Australia to fix them up. But of course, that meant that the towns that we were living in, the association wasn't always the best. And I remember in Port Augusta, we lived near the centre of town, and there was a square called Gladstone Square. And Gladstone Square was a famous drinking park. I remember one day walking past Gladstone Square, and there were 20 Aboriginal people sitting in a circle and one white lady, right? And what they would do is they'd pass a flagon around. You know what a flagon is? There's a big bottle about this big. It probably had, 2 litres of wine in it. Flagon is the biggest bottle you can buy from the bottle shop. And they're all singing, "There's a red back on the toilet seat when I went out last night." And I was just thinking, whoa, look at this. And I was only 16, I would have been 15 or 16 at the time. And I could see the power of association, how it could be so degrading. So we have to be careful. And you know, that's a fairly gross example, but the modes of ignorance and so the mode of passion is very prominent in society, even in a polished fashion, and so therefore it looks to be very high class or very attractive. Now, the devotees have to be very careful, because that kind of association is dangerous. Even though we may get some benefit from it, right? All of us are working, most of us, householders, are all working in an environment where we have to associate closely with non-devotees. Right? Hands up those who have got a job. And are working with not devotees. Hands up. Yeah, this is why devotees often want to work with devotees, because the association is it can be debilitating, especially for our spiritual. This is why we have the spiritual sandwich. You know what the spiritual sandwich is? We have a strong sadhana in the morning, and we have a strong sadhana in the evening as well. Something that in the early days of ISKCON, certainly when I joined, that's what you did. We came back from Sankirtan. The first thing we did was take off our wigs. Oh, you take your wig off, it's like, oh boy. Because all day you've got your head in this vice-like grip. So, and then head to the shower. Head to the shower. Have a shower, put on dhoti and kurta and tilak, have some prasadam, and then go to the 7 o'clock aarti. If you didn't go to the 7 o'clock aarti, you were in Maya. Right? There'd be somebody on your case. Hey, why aren't you at the aarti? Right? And then after Sanja aarti, then there'd be the Bhagavad Gita class. Balaram used to give Bhagavad Gita class on Wednesdays. Remember that, yeah. Bhakti? And if you didn't come to the Bhagavad Gita class that Balaram gave, you were in trouble. But there's a practice, because you know, that may not be practical for it. This is one of the devotees, Garuda, was up at New Govardhan at the Sacred Sound Retreat. He was saying to me how, you know, we want to make this festival a national festival. And on Easter, all the devotees of Australia come to New Govardhan and we celebrate the Sankirtan. Well, and of course that's what we used to do in the 70s and in the 80s. If there was a festival, then everybody, all of the devotees, would leave their temples, except for a few to keep the puja going. And we'd all go to New Govardhan and have a festival. But in those days, everybody was the same age. Everybody was doing the same thing. We were all Hare Krishnas. Right? But these days, there's such a diversity of our community. There's, you know, we've got these young fellows here, and then we've got the old fellows up the back who have to sit in the chairs. Right? And then the broad spectrum in between. Some are students, some are single, some are married, married without kids, married with young kids, married with kids going to primary school, married with kids going to high school. So we've got, you know, this is why management of ISKCON is much more complicated than it used to be, is because we now have such a diverse set of circumstances for everybody. In those days, everybody went to the aarti. Right? Everybody had to go to the Bhagavad Gita class because everybody was basically doing the same thing. Because these days, we're all doing different things. And that's, of course, that's just a measure of the fact that we're a more broader community now. Broader spectrum of participation in age, in occupation, in cultural upbringing. It's much broader, but still this principle is important, the principle of good association. And good association means good association so that we can perform sadhana together. Right? Sadhana for the neophytes, but sadhana is also for the advanced devotees. This is something that everybody does. This is a symptom of a Vaishnava. Even the liberated personalities, even Lord Chaitanya himself would be performing sadhana to achieve the satya, the goal. Right? The sadhana is to achieve a goal. And of course, our goal is to reawaken or re-establish our spiritual identity. And that's done through spiritual practice. And of course, once we've achieved our goal, the spiritual practice still is part of the life of a devotee. So this principle is very important. Sangam Tamaha. This association with those in the mode of ignorance. And why is that? Hedonistic activities are the greatest obstructions. Titrishu. Those who desire, persons who desire to cross over nescience, avoid this association to avoid the, what is it, yad atyanta vighatakam, the stumbling blocks, vighatakam. The association of those in the mode of ignorance is the greatest obstacle or stumbling block to the path of bhakti. Of course, here it's mentioned dharma, artha, karma, moksha, which are not necessarily the goals of the devotees. No? The devotee's goal is liberation. We want everybody move forward. You only moved 1 meter last time. Now let's go to the next. There's plenty of room in this temple room. There's at least a meter of space here. That's why I said 3 meters at the beginning. Okay. So now, Prabhupada says here, the four principles of life allow one to live according to religious principles, to earn money, to have some sense gratification, and ultimately to progress along the path of liberation. You know, we're not against, you know, the idea that a spiritually advanced person has no possessions is really demonstrated in the life of a devotee. So that even though we may work, and we do work, and we acquire money, and there's also some sense gratification. One has to eat, sleep, engage the senses in sense gratification, and there has to be some defense. Of course, for the devotees, that activity is very regulated, but we still have possessions. But the mentality or the consciousness of the devotee is that these possessions belong to Krishna. So that even a very, very wealthy man can possess large amounts of material facility. But because he understands that that facility is only temporarily in his custody, and that he's looking after it for Krishna and using it for Krishna's service, then the devotee can own all amount of wealth. There's nothing wrong with being wealthy. There's nothing wrong with working to acquire wealth. But the consciousness of a bhakta, of a devotee, is that that wealth is not his, but is in his protection on behalf of, or it is being used on behalf of the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His family members are not his, but rather they're Krishna's. And because they belong to Krishna, therefore they should be looked after carefully. Huh? Just like our kitchen utensils. This is a consciousness that we need to work on in this community, because very often the devotees are breaking things in the kitchen. Huh? That's kind of indicative of the fact that they're not really conscious of what they're looking after. Or they don't bother to find out how to use it properly. Huh? Or we're not teaching them how to use it properly. But we should be conscious of what we're in charge of, and we should look after it properly because it belongs to Krishna. This is the art of management. Anybody know what the art of management is? Keeping things clean, right? For example. Actually, management is all about deity worship. Did you know that? Because if we recognize that everything belongs to Krishna, then we'll treat it with great respect. Ideally, this is the proper mentality, and keep it clean. Right? Just like we keep our clothes clean, right? Don't we? Everybody put on clean clothes when they wake up in the morning. Yeah. And we like to look neat and clean. We like to look good. At least I do. Huh? Like to look good, presentable. Prabhupada said, first dress, then address. And so you'd see, Prabhupada was very particular about how he looked. Even though he was a sannyasi, still he would make sure that his fingernails were trimmed. Right? He would make sure that he was shaved. You know, sometimes we see sadhus and they've got a bristly beard. And it's kind of like considered cool. Oh, he's a sadhu. Look, he's got a beard. But Prabhupada, you look at the pictures of Srila Prabhupada, look in the Vyasa Puja books. I challenge you to find a picture. There are some, but very rare to find a picture of Prabhupada with a beard. Have you noticed that? Or with long hair. Prabhupada always had he always shaved up. And most often had it is. So he was into presentation, looking after things. Why? Even there's the story of when Prabhupada saw a tap dripping And he got on the devotee's case. Bhavananda used to tell that story, right? And he would say, we're wasting Krishna's energy. Turn the tap off. Right? So, the art of management is keeping things clean and fit for purpose. Right? And in their right place. In their right place. So if you're running a factory, for example, because, you know, we think of management, we think of corporations and businesses and whatever. But the same principle applies here in our deity worship, actually. Right? Having things fit. What does it mean, fit for purpose? What does it mean, fit for purpose?
It's capable of doing what it is meant to be.
One at a time.
It is able to do what it is meant to be.
Yeah, it's able to do what it's meant to do. Right? So here what happens, I'll tell you what happens here. Somebody breaks the veggie cutter, and then have a guess what they do. What do you think they do?
Hide it.
They hide it. Yeah, they hide it. So when the next person comes along, have a guess what happens. Is it fit for purpose? No, it's not. It's broken. And so the next person can't use it. But the person who broke it, what mode is that? If they just hide it, what mode is that? Huh? Ignorance. Yeah, it's the mode of ignorance. Or the mode of passion. My reputation will be dented. We can't have that. So I won't tell anybody that I broke it. And I'll just leave it. Now, is that Krishna consciousness or what? When you think about it, what is it?
Self-aggrandizement.
Eh?
Self-aggrandizement.
Self-aggrandizement, maybe. I didn't do it. Wasn't me. So, fit for purpose, clean, fit for purpose, and in the right place. These are standard kind of management. There are books written about how to be an organized person. Huh? Many books. This is one of the recommendations. In fact, I've read one book where it says you can. Everything in your office, because, you know, I work in an office, but the same goes with a kitchen, for example. You can put a label on the place where everything should go. So that way then, you know, your office is clean and tidy when you've got everything on top of its label. But then, of course, when it's time to do something, boom, off you go. It's all there. Dun, 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 dun. And you can do stuff very efficiently. Whereas if everything's all over the place and it's dirty and untidy, what happens? You know, I've gone into some of my lawyers' offices and they have got piles of paper everywhere. I'm like, how do you guys do anything? Oh, hang on a minute, I'll find something. Rummage around, oh, I can't find it. So this slows down your effectiveness and your efficiency. So the art of management is an extension of deity worship, as far as I can see. Because in deity worship, same thing. Everything should be clean. Right? Everything should be in its place. Who amongst the ladies here does the clear wet side? Or has done it? Right? Everything has its place, right? So when a pujari comes in the morning and he wants to do the puja, then he just goes boom, 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 puts it all together and then into the deity room. So that everything can then be on time. Right? And Prabhupada, you know, the Prabhupada put emphasis on punctuality and cleanliness in deity worship. It's the same principle. And when we're doing our service, who are we doing it for? Even if we're at work, who are we doing it for? We're still doing it for Krishna. Right? And so in one sense, then it's still deity worship. Right? Whatever we do. This is why we have to be careful about this tamagun. Where does the tamagun come from? The hiding of the broken veggie cutter machine. Where does that mentality come from? Better to be an honest, what does Prabhupada say? An honest sweeper of the street than a charlatan meditator. Right? So we have to own up to the temple, to the kitchen manager. Oh, Prabhu, I broke the machine. Huh? And so if he knows, then at least we can fix it. Not that the next devotee comes along and is broken. And the only reason why I'm mentioning this is because somebody broke the veggie cutter on Thursday night. But it's hundreds of dollars. You know, it's hundreds of dollars that we lose when we break these machines by not using them properly. Usually it's, you know, and you've got to put them together in the right way. Right? And I'm pretty sure that the devotees who are cutting up the veggies, it's not the first time that they've done it. Just fell asleep or something. Influenced by the mode of ignorance usually. Or the mode of passion, doing things too quick, trying to do it too quickly, not carefully enough. Well, the devotee has to be, we have to be careful about these, paying attention to these details. Because it is, you know, whatever we do, and this is why the sadhana is important. And why avoiding bad association is important. Because by associating with the devotees, we remember what we're doing. We're awakened to our spiritual identity. We're awakened to self-realization. This is why the association of the devotees is so important. Why the instructions of Sanat Kumar here are so important. Because by getting the association of the devotees, we're awakened to our Krishna consciousness. We're awakened to our own spiritual identity. But our spiritual identity is not something in isolation. It's always in relationship to someone. Or not just someone, but many, actually. Our spiritual awakening is making us aware of our relationship with Krishna, but also with Krishna's devotees, primarily the spiritual master. But then, as I was just reading, along with the spiritual master comes the devotees, right? And it means pleasing the devotees. Prabhupada makes a point. Sometimes the spiritual master is more happy when the devotees are serving each other than just serving the guru. Right? And Prabhupada makes a point. He said, we're not impersonalists. We take care of... And that also means then Krishna's paraphernalia, by the way. Looking after Krishna's paraphernalia. Just like Prabhupada says, we'll look after the hat, right? We look after our hat, but we also look after our shoes. Although looking at the shoes in the shoe rack, sometimes I wonder. Of course, sometimes people come to the temple just to steal shoes. They take the best shoes, right? And then leave behind their really old, beaten up, dirty ones. But we look after, so in becoming Krishna conscious, yes, we're aware of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we're aware of our identity as a servant of God. But a deeper realization is that our service to God is very, very often not a direct relationship, but that it is a relationship with the devotees. And that pleasing Krishna is very often achieved by serving, or at least working cooperatively with the devotees. That's the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, actually, is that working together as a cooperative effort. And so in one sense, in that situation, in that set of relationships, we're all serving each other just by working together cooperatively. And using all of these facilities, dharma, what we do is religious. But more importantly, it's our occupation. That each of the activities that we perform, although that is important, this is the principle of vana and ashrama. Vana means we're working in a capacity that's our natural propensity. And it's something, because it's our natural propensity, it's generally something that engaged in that activity we'll be happy doing. But the real principle of our occupation is that we understand, regardless of what we're doing, that suits our psychophysical nature. And that's the purpose, the duty of the spiritual master, is to help the disciple identify what their psychophysical nature is and to engage in that activity. But the real occupation is that we're a servant of Krishna. That's our first occupation. And so whatever we do it with that proper understanding. And, you know, with the right attention to detail. And then automatically we'll benefit. By the pursuit of, Prabhupada mentions that spiritual life means that automatically we'll make progress in spiritual advancement, and at the same time we'll also make progress materially. And so we don't have to worry about whether we'll be looked after materially or not. That will happen automatically if we approach our service with the right mentality, that is, understanding that I'm a servant of Krishna. Daso smi. Right, this is the proper mentality of the devotees. And even in our material pursuits, so-called material pursuits, they're not actually material pursuits when we pursue them with the right mentality of understanding that I'm a hum brahmasmi, that I'm a spirit being, spirit soul, and that the quality or the mood of the devotee is that I do whatever I do as a service to Krishna. Now, because we generally don't have a direct relationship, although it is very interesting, the mystical, the esoteric principles that are embodied within service to Krishna are manifest primarily in service to the spiritual master. But then service to the spiritual master means also then serving the devotees. So the interesting thing is that when we're properly situated in this mood of service, we're doing it as a service to the devotees, as a service to the spiritual master, and then ultimately as a service to Krishna. And in the in the prosecution of that, of those activities, we develop our relationship both with the devotees, with the spiritual master, and with Krishna. Quite powerful. And so even though it appears that we're sweeping the courtyard, or we're going to work for NAB, or, you know, whatever it may be, externally, from the external platform, if we're doing this with the right consciousness, then we're developing our relationship with the devotees, with the spiritual master, and with Krishna. And even with our boss, actually, because the funny thing is that when it was mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that a devotee is engaged in that fashion is actually pleasing to everyone. Right? Devotees are actually very pleasing to everyone because they're engaged in their activities with the right consciousness. And of course, in that consciousness then, we feel transcendence. Although, I don't know, how do you feel on a Friday afternoon after you've been at work all week? How do you feel? Yeah. It's Friday, I've got Saturday on my mind. Actually, there's a famous Australian song, it's called Monday, I've Got Friday on My Mind. So we have to be careful, right? We have to be careful. This is why weekends are recommended, because even the karmis know, oh, I've been working all week, when am I going to get out of this place, right? And having a break, just like we're doing. It's Saturday morning, and so what do? We go to the temple, and we have the kirtan, and we hear the Bhagavatam, we worship Radha Ballabha, and we feel the exuberance and the enthusiasm that comes from that association. I remember when we used to, the temple courtyard at the back, which was, we used to have a dozen Ford Falcon, was it a dozen? At least eight Ford Falcon station wagons. Right? Because we were selling T-shirts in those days, right? Candles, T-shirts. And we were raising funds, collecting money for Krishna. We were on a mission from God. Huh? Selling stickers and paintings and candles and T-shirts and cookies and whatever. And there'd be a competition. We'd have a competition. Who could collect the most? Because in those days, if you collected the most money, then you were the most advanced. Even now, even in our community, if you make money, right? If you're driving a Mercedes and you've got a house in Albert Park, I won't mention any names, then you're successful. Huh? But why are you successful? Because you're living near the temple. And you can go and have breakfast at the temple every morning. Right? Is that right? That's the advantage of living near the temple. We see it. The householders go home with plates of prasad for wife and the kids. Right? This is the advantage of living in Albert Park. So, we used to think, whoever collects the most money is the most advanced. And of course, if your name was read out at number one, then everybody go, Jai, Haribol! So you got the biggest jais greeting the deities as well. So, profit, distinction and adoration even exists amongst the devotees. But I remember very often you'd go out and work very hard all day and, you know, have to face lots of rejection because selling things, there's always people saying, no mate, don't want that. And so by the end of the day, and you'll experience it too, when you go to work, how do you feel at the end of the day? How do you feel at the end of the day, Amala Gora Sudra? How do you feel? You're tired, right? You're tired, you're exhausted. And so I remember driving in the back gate of the temple, and then you would feel the release, the relief. You're out there battling with the material energy, and then you come back to the temple, and then it's like, oh. And people say it. They say, when I come here, I feel there's something. There's something different here. Huh? Can't work out what it is. But it's the potency of bhakti. And of course that's what the bhakta has. The devotee has bhakti. And bhakti is very attractive. Even Krishna is attracted to bhakti. So much so that he wants to be a bhakti himself, to find out what taste of bhakti the devotees feel. Right? So, coming into the environment of the temple means being engaged in bhakti. And of course, that's our ISKCON sandwich. Strong morning program, strong evening program, even when we're tired, right? Some hearing and chanting, or have a quick snooze when you get home, right? And then after you've had a snooze, get together with the family and chant Hare Krishna. Hear some transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And what a wonderful character he is. Right? Isn't it amazing? Today, we worship the personality of Godhead who gets angry. Right? We worship him. Usually, we encourage people, oh, shanti, shanti, peace, peace, man. Right? Don't get angry. Don't get angry. But when you think about it, we worship a God who gets angry and who kills our enemies, right? Even I've mentioned this before. In the brainwashing case against the devotees in New York, one of the arguments that the prosecutors used was that these people worship a God who kills their parents. If their parents are against them, then they worship a God who kills their parents. What kind of a religion is this? Huh? And we do, you know, we worship the Partha Sarathi, right? Who fights with his devotees. Right? We even worship the devotee who fights with Krishna. Who's that? Vishnudev. Now, isn't that amazing? When you think about it, the depth, the breadth and the depth of the character of the personality of Godhead. Where he becomes angry at those who oppose the devotees. And he's worshipped for that. For destroying the obstacles. Of course, we have to apply that appropriately. You know, even though Krishna shows great anger in the form of Lord Nrisingadev, great anger at those who oppose and obstruct the activities of the devotees, that doesn't mean that we can also demonstrate such anger. Certainly not in the way that he did. Right? Although, it's interesting, in the Upadeshamrita in the first verse, Vacho Vegam Manasakroda Vegam, right? There's the push of anger. So we are recommended to control the push of anger. But Prabhupada says we can control it, and our example is again the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya. Right? Lord Chaitanya became angry at Jagai and Madai because they attacked Lord Nityananda. So the example is, of course, for ourselves, if somebody's attacking us, we are surrendered. But if somebody's attacking the devotees, then we become like fire. Because we still have to apply that appropriately. We can't walk the streets of Melbourne, you know, attacking people. Although, since we're in the mood of remembering the good old days, what the devotees used to do was, because on Harinam Sankirtan, even these days, you'll see sometimes you're having a really fired up kirtan, and then from 50 metres away you'll see somebody running towards the Sankirtan party. And I'm looking at it and think, uh-oh, what's going to happen here? And then the fellow jumps into the middle and starts dancing with the devotees. Oh, wow. But in the 70s, people used to come running and jump into the Sankirtan party from 50 metres away, but then they want to fight and have a punch-up. There was, going on Harinam was always an exciting activity, because you never knew what was going to happen next. So what the devotees used to do, there would be two devotees who dressed in plain clothes, right? And so they would go with the Harinam party and they would clean up the people who were to take the devotees. Fortunately, in this day and age, we don't have to do things like that. But the principle is, and of course some devotees used to like to volunteer, I'll protect the devotees from the demons. So we do have to be restrained in our response these days. But still, we are recommended. We can use anger appropriately in service to Krishna. And so we are not averse to appreciating or even worshipping these qualities of the devotees, or these qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although ordinarily anger is something that would be considered a contaminator. Anger is very much a manifestation of the mode of ignorance, right? And here we're recommended to give up the mode of ignorance. Yet in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he becomes angry, we say, "Join the Sringadev." I remember one time, since I'm in a reminiscing mood, Korma was cooking the feast for Lord Nrisingadev. And he put a poster up on the notice board. We had a little notice board underneath the stairs, and had a picture of Lord Nrisingadev ripping out the entrails of Lord Nrisingadev. Right? And so Korma said, we need volunteers for the Sunday feast. And then down the bottom he said, "Let's rip into it, lads." One of the devotees, whose name I won't mention, got upset. "Oh, this is being too frivolous." And maybe it was. But still, it is interesting that we worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with all of his various moods and manifestations, and even we can appreciate his anger. Anger is still a quality that can be used in Krishna's service. Not that we, you know, because even if we repress it, right? If your children are misbehaving, what do you do? What's that?
Send them to the mother.
Send them to the mother. Right. What does she do when she gets angry? She sends them to you. So even in disciplining our children, we have to be sometimes firm with them and sometimes show some anger. Does that mean we don't love them? Right, this is the thing. We think, oh, anger, you're getting angry. Shanti, shanti. But that's silly in one sense, isn't it? We're like Krishna, right? In quality we're like Krishna, in quantity we're not. That's obvious. But in quality we are. And so we see Krishna uses manifests all of these moods, so we can also see these moods in the devotees. Appropriately applied, of course. There's the material manifestation, but when everything is done, the material manifestation of I am the controller and I'm the enjoyer. This is why we're put in the material world. Unfortunately, we are caught by envy. And that envy is of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the fact that He's the Supreme Enjoyer and the Supreme Controller. And so, Krishna, in order to Maya, the material energy, in order to facilitate our envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, puts us into the material world so we can make out like we're the Supreme Controller and the Supreme Enjoyer. Right? We get that opportunity. But then, of course, the material energy is also designed in such a way so that we have to learn that we're not the Supreme Controller and the Supreme Enjoyer. But that's why we have the material world, so that we can imitate Krishna. So we have the same qualities, but in quantity, diminished. Infinitesimally diminished. But when we use those characteristics or those qualities appropriately in the service of God, then we can manifest our real personality. And we can use those things. Even anger can be used in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in the service of the spiritual master, and in the service of the devotees. So, you know, when somebody breaks the kitchen utensils, then I get angry. In one sense, it's my duty to do that also, right? Although I usually just get angry with the chincharupa. Then she goes and fixes it up. Actually, it's the other way around. What happens is she finds out about it, she gets angry, I get angry, then she goes and fixes it. But anyway, so the personality of Godhead, especially Lord Nrisimhadeva's very unique character or personality in the realm of bhakti and in the realm of the different pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that, Lord Nrisimhadeva actually gets pleasure in fighting with his devotees. He gets pleasure in, of course, that's Jaya Vijaya. We know that they manifest as demons, but actually they're devotees. And that pastime is to facilitate that natural propensity of the Lord to want to fight. You see it with boys and girls. Differently manifest. But when we were up at Moolambar for the sacred sound retreat. Chincharipa was looking after the children. And she was telling me the difference between the boys and the girls. The young teenage girls were doing Bharatanatyam dancing and gymnastics and doing some, you know, cartwheels and things that all very kind of delicate and with some sort of finesse, right? But the boys just come running in, push each other and punch and fight, right? No finesse whatsoever. Just let's push them over. So this is the mentality, and this is the mentality, and even that manifests in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He likes to fight. So this is natural. We see it in the. We see it in, even in our personalities. There are natural tendencies that we get ultimately from Krishna, and they're not to be necessarily avoided, because you can't avoid. We can't avoid our personality, but what we do is we use it, or we engage it in Krishna's service. And that's a perfection. And you know, we can celebrate Lord Nrisimhadev's personality as the... Of course, he's not always angry, but certainly he shows his anger when necessary, and especially in dealing with the demons. Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha were two of the most obnoxious demons in their behavior and of their persecution of the devotees. And especially in relationship to Prahlad Maharaj, who was the most tolerant and peaceful and self-controlled of the devotees, even as a child, most advanced devotee, and who had great faith in the presence of the Lord, such that when Hiranyakashipu said, you know, where is your God? How is he going to protect you? Where is he? And you know, when he struck the pillar and said, you know, is he in this pillar? Then Lord Nrisimhadev, out he came. And interesting, so many facets of Lord Nrisimhadev's pastime. When Lord Nrisimhadev appeared at the same time, as he does very often in his pastimes, he was protecting and fulfilling the promise of his devotee. Right? When Krishna fought with Bhishmadev, he was fulfilling the promise of Bhishmadev, that Bhishmadev would make him fight. Right? Although, actually, he broke the promise, his own promise, that he would not fight. Right? So Krishna doesn't mind breaking his own promise if he's fulfilling the promise of the devotee, interestingly enough. But in killing Hiranyakashipu, he fulfilled the promise of Lord Brahma, that Lord Brahma had given to Hiranyakashipu, that he wouldn't be killed this way, he wouldn't be killed that way, it wouldn't be this time, it wouldn't be that time, it wouldn't be inside or outside, in the sky, on the earth, underwater. He fulfilled all of those. So still mindful of service to his devotee. So this is another characteristic of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he likes to serve his devotees who serve him. There's another facet of the amazing character of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that he likes to serve his servants. Just like the servants like to serve, he also likes to serve. That's amazing when you think about it. And of course, we like to serve as well. This is another characteristic or another mood of the personality of Godhead that his servants also have, and that is that they like to serve the devotees. So we can see Lord Nrisimhadev is serving Prahlad Maharaj by protecting him, but he's also serving Lord Brahma by protecting his promises to Hiranyakashipu. So this mood of service to the devotees and this exercising even of anger out of affection, right? Not anger because our senses are uncontrolled but rather that anything can be engaged in Krishna's service in that proper mood of everything belongs to God, I'm his servant, I can use whatever facility I've been afforded with a proper understanding that ultimately the real proprietor is Krishna. And as his servant, then it is my duty to use these things, to apply these things in Krishna's service. And that's why we have our sadhana practice. Our sadhana practice is to keep us always in that state of remembering that I'm a servant and that I should serve. And that I serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I serve the Guru, but most often I serve the devotees. Because that's what pleases Krishna, that's what also pleases the spiritual master. Prabhupada says that we should, if we want to please the spiritual master, we should serve the devotees. And here, avoid the association of the materialistic people, because that will bring our consciousness down from that mood of service, and maintaining that service attitude, remembering who we are. That's best done in the association of the devotees. But we've still got to interact. We're not renunciates in the sense that we go to the forest. Who's going to go to the forest? Which forest are you going to? Right? You can't. This is not, you know, in Satya Yuga, you can just walk around and eat the fruits that are hanging off the trees and live like that. I don't know if you've noticed the fruits of gum trees, they're practically speaking inedible. You can't eat them, right? And Australia's mostly made up of gum trees, right? So very few places where you're going to get any fruits to eat. So we have to engage with the material energy. We have to engage with the world. But we can do it in a spirit or in a mood of renunciation, with that understanding. Not, what is it? Idam Krishnaya, idam na mama. This is Krishna's, it's not mine. Therefore, good sadhana is required to keep remembering. And that means asat sanga tyag. Give up bad association, but that means then sadhu sangha. We have to be careful in our association. Just like this last 2 days, I went to a conference. The not-for-profit and charities regulatory conference. Pretty exciting stuff. At least I thought there was some. I'm glad I went to the conference because I discovered a few things now that I have to tidy up. I've now got at least, I think, 8 constitutions that I need to reword, and then we're having our annual general meeting in Mooloolaba next weekend. So I now need to tidy up some constitutions and get them approved at the AGM. Otherwise, it's very interesting. It's a rule that was just passed this year, and the rule is that if you are a DGR, do you know what I mean by a DGR? A DGR is an entity which, when given a donation, they can then issue a tax receipt and you get something off your tax. So that's Hare Krishna Food for Life. So who gives donations here? Yeah? And you prefer to give to Hare Krishna Food for Life, right? So if you don't have a clause in your constitution that says that if you wind up your organisation, the funds will only go to another DGR registered charity, right? If you don't have that in your constitution and they find out, then they can remove your access to all of your past and future DGR donations. Huh? So that means all of the money that people have given you in the past, you have to give them back their... theoretically, that means they lose their tax deductibility. So they can't claim tax on their donations. So you have to... Well, the law's only just been passed this year, but that means now I have to change all of the constitutions of all of the Hare Krishna Food for Life entities in Australia so that we fulfil that requirement. So I'm glad I went, because it would be very embarrassing if we were put into a situation where that wasn't the case and we lost that DGR status. No? But anyway, getting back to the story, I felt quite tired last night after spending 2 days just hearing all of this mumbo jumbo about rules and regulations related to charities and not-for-profits. But I can use it in Krishna service, right? But still, again, the association, it's a bit mundane, it's a bit boring, it's a bit, you know, just material. But then, back in the association of the devotees, with the kirtan, with the deities, with the prasadam, then we're back fired up again. So we have to be careful. And that's why the sadhana is important for us. You know, every morning we have the 9 processes of bhakti. In the evening we should have that. But even then, when it's 4 o'clock and the alarm goes off, how do you feel? Yay! Another day in the office. Who feels like that? Another day to go to school. Oh, fantastic. Nice. Oh, no, I've got to get up and go to Mangalarti. My mind hurts. My body hurts. But still we have to push on. Huh? And even though it's very, you know, the mode of goodness is such that in the beginning it tastes like poison. Right? But in the end, it's like nectar. So we should... there are austerities, even austerities performed in the practice of bhakti. But if we stick at it, then in the end, we get the fruits of bhakti, which is really prema. The fruit of bhakti is prema. And if we stick to that sadhana practice morning and night, then that will sustain us through the austerities and the difficulties. Actually, the austerities and the difficulties are there to test our bhakti. We sometimes think, oh, why have I got all of these problems? I'm a devotee. Why isn't Krishna looking after me? But actually, Krishna is looking after us even when he's testing us. Right? Just like when your mother and father disciplined you and you thought that they didn't really love you, the main purpose for them disciplining and testing you is because they loved you and they wanted to see you properly develop as a person. So, you know, we look at sometimes at the tests, the trials and tribulations as if it means that Krishna doesn't like us. And of course, that's Maya's embarrassing task. She's embarrassed by the fact that her service is to test the devotees. She's embarrassed by that. But actually, that is still Krishna's mercy. Because very often, what Krishna is revealing to us is our lack of bhakti. Right? Because we don't like that. We think, hang on a second, well, this is not fair. Why am I being exposed as not a very good devotee? Right? We think, well, it's not fair. I'm a good devotee. But why am I being exposed as not a good devotee? And that's actually Krishna's mercy, to teach us humility, to teach us tolerance, to teach us patience. And you see, the characteristic of the most advanced devotee is that he thinks, I'm not actually a devotee. So Krishna's, through Maya, is testing us to show us what kind of a devotee we really are. And that's for our benefit. A devotee never thinks that he's a big devotee. As soon as we're thinking, you know, oh, I'm pretty advanced, then we can understand, ooh, wrong. And so those tests are also Krishna's mercy. And we should understand, always understand how infinitesimally small and unqualified we are, and that if we are ever capable of doing something or being able to achieve something, then that's only because of the mercy of the spiritual master. You see that with Srila Prabhupada. He would always offer any of his successes to Prabhupada, to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, and to Krishna. And that's the proper mood of a devotee. So when we're being beaten down, it's so that Krishna is actually protecting us from our own pride. And even pride as a devotee is very dangerous. So anyway, I may finish here. Even though we're fasting all day. We could. I've got a meeting at 10 o'clock. So does anybody have any comments or questions? Realizations? Oh, okay. The certificate receivers here. They might have all gone home by now. Okay, well, yeah. So, gee, this is a long time ago. It took us a while to get our certificates together, didn't it? This course was held on the 1st of July 2018. Let me announce something as well. One of the things that we're working on is a board of education for ISKCON Melbourne. Education is an interesting thing because of its importance. And Prabhupada wanted our institution to be an educational institution. Right? When Srila Prabhupada came to America, on his passport, his occupation was what?
Teacher.
Teacher. His occupation was teacher. So education is core to what we do. But there are various aspects to education. So we're working on forming a board, an education board. We have a number of devotees who are experienced in the realm of education. Prana, Prabhu, Aditya, Brajaraj, Chambalaba, is also pretty. You're a teacher too. You trained as a teacher. You've got many, many qualifications, right? So we want to establish a board so that we can articulate our mission and our vision and our standards. You know, the qualifications for the teachers, the qualifications for the students, the qualifications for assessment. So we also need administrators as well. We need administration so that we give out certificates on time, for example. But we also keep track of all of the students and what they've achieved, right? Because sometimes people will say, yeah, I've done this and I've done that and I'm a this and that and the other thing. And we say, well, where's your certificate? Ooh, right? So we need to keep track of things. It's important. We also need teachers. Right? We need qualified teachers. Teachers who are capable of delivering, well, first of all, modelling the principles and the values and the skills and the knowledge of what we're teaching, but also who are good teachers and who are good at assessing the students and setting up lessons so that we know what we're teaching, we're able to measure that we've actually taught it. So we need good teachers, and of course we need students as well, of which we've got. You know, so we've just completed a round of teacher training course one, teacher training course two, plus Bhakti Shastri teacher training, and we're going to establish more Bhakti Shastri courses coming up in June, July, and also the beginning of next year. And so we want to establish ISKCON Melbourne as a educational institution, along with all of the other things that we're doing. And so, if anybody's interested in being a teacher, if anybody's interested in being a student in the next Bhakti Shastri round of Bhakti Shastri courses that we're going to be starting, if you want to be an administrator, if you want to help us manage all of the educational programs, then And if you think you can help out in the planning and the development of courses, then let us know. You can talk to Priti. She's going to be advertising the next Bhakti Shastri courses, so you'll be able to apply online. If you're keen to participate in any of those activities, especially administration. Actually had one devotee at the end of the Bhakti Shastra teacher training course said, yep, I'm interested in administration. And he's already given me a plan. He gave me a plan yesterday how to roll out this lot of Bhakti Shastra. I haven't read it yet, so we need to look at it. But administrators are good, especially in education, because we've got to get track of all of this stuff. Huh? Make sense? So if you think you can help, please get in touch with me or Priti. If you want to participate in the next round of Bhakti Shastri courses, keep an eye out. There are prerequisites. It's not open to everybody. So we will check your credentials. Rightio. So we're going to hand out some certificates for those who completed the Founder Acharya course. If you want to take, if you're a shelter candidate or you're aspiring to take shelter prior to initiation, then doing the Founder Acharya course is a prerequisite. Right? Along with reading the Lilamrita and answering an essay question, which is proving to be a bit of a challenge for people. But we will teach you how to answer an essay question if you're struggling with that. Huh? It means having to think, which is can be a problem. As opposed to just regurgitating facts. It's connecting facts and then putting them together in a way where we appreciate some of the purposes, the mood and mission of Srila Prabhupada in establishing ISKCON especially. I'll tell you why, I'll mention this. One of the reasons why I established this principle of reading the Lilamrita, because I was teaching the disciple course and I discovered that many of the students hadn't read the Lilamrita. And I find it difficult to understand how people can know Srila Prabhupada without at least reading his biography. So this is one of the reasons why we place this as a prerequisite for taking shelter. You need to know something about Prabhupada's life. And not just the facts, you know, that he was born here, that he opened up a temple, but some of the other principles of his mood and mission. We should understand that in ISKCON. Right? Okay, so the Founder Acharya course is part of that. Knowing, you know, Prabhupada's role and position in ISKCON. Without Srila Prabhupada, none of us would be here. Right? We need to appreciate that. Okay, so thank you to those who have completed this course. Abhishek Mistry. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Deepankar. Deepankar? He's not here.
He's going to collect them on his behalf. Like the next
Okay, ready? Zana, that's Deepankar's wife. Deepika Koltari.
Yeah. From the same
The same. Anmol. Is he here? Amol Sharma? No. Kushal Ashik. Ashik. Sobran. Ah, here we go. Ashik is a fantastic kirtan leader and a good mridanga player. And also a very jolly fellow. Love him. His brother. Ushma.
That's my assistant.
That's your sister-in-law. Very good. Same. Madhukar Nirman. Hare Krishna. Is he here? Yep. No. Priti. I know Priti and Madhukar. They're not here, but I know who that is. Mitu. Mitu Shah. I know Mitu. Monica. That's Mahalakshmi.
That's the legal name. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. You can have these in your devotional name or your legal name. Where's Mahalakshmi? Out selling books, right? Here, you can take it. Hema Rawat. Huh? Hema Sharma. Hema. He's always at the morning program, Emma. Hiral Shah. Rajendra Rawat. Shapna Sharma, that's Sriji. Sriji's a very good cook. Although those kachoris the other day were a bit much for me, I'm afraid. But not the fault of the kachori, it's just my poor. Sharan Rama Rapu. Sharan. Hare Krishna. Siddhartha Saklani. This is Taravali, although that's not what it says on the album. Upendra Gandapaneni. Gundapaneni. Is that a Gundapaneni? Gundapaneni. Is that a Telugu name?
Yeah.
Is it? It looks like it is.
Yeah.
And Priti Lakshana. Is it? Priti Sharma.
Yeah.
I don't even know their own names. This is what happens. We're devotees for so long we forget what their former name was. Okay, thank you everybody. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai, Lord Narasingha Dev, ki jai.